Hello, seafood friends. You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent, bringing you everything from the boats to the boardrooms, breaking down the news, spilling a little industry fish oil, and sharing the sharp market insights you need to know. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. Surprise! In another twist in the never-ending trade war, the President Donald Trump administration declared last Friday, May 29th, that it will appeal how the U.S. Court of International Trade is handling refunds of International Emergency Economic Powers Act tariffs, also known as IEEPA. And according to several international trade attorneys, that appeal could create problems for companies that requested refunds from Customs and Border Protection but never filed lawsuits challenging the tariffs.
To understand why, let's back up a bit. Earlier this year, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in the VOS elections versus Trump case that the administration's use of IEEPA to impose tariffs was unlawful. Since then, CBP has been working through an enormous refund process. Brandon Lords, CBP's Executive Director of Trade Programs, said the agency has already accepted about $85 billion in potential and certified refunds for processing, and more than $20 billion has already been paid back. But thousands of refund requests are still moving through the system, and some remain stalled because importers haven't provided banking information.
The seafood industry has a lot at stake here. Between April 2025 and February 2026, U.S. seafood importers paid nearly $2.7 billion in duties on almost $24 billion worth of seafood imports. That's an average tariff rate of about 11% there. And those tariffs came after the administration imposed a universal 10% tariff on imports before escalating duties on some countries even further. Seafood importers responded aggressively. Thousands of companies sued the federal government over the tariffs, including nearly 100 seafood businesses. Some of the more recognizable names include Beaver Street Fisheries, Mark Foods, Mazzetta, Moe, and Phillips Foods. Canadian seafood giant Highliner Foods has said it's seeking at least $41.3 million in tariff refunds, and more seafood companies continue to join the litigation, including Leroy Seafood and Blue Sea Products, which is owned by Captain Fresh.
But here's where things get interesting. Not every importer filed a lawsuit. Some companies decided that simply filing refund requests with customs would be enough and chose not to spend money pursuing legal action. Now, attorneys are warning that those companies could face greater uncertainty if the government's appeal succeeds. The Supreme Court never specified addressed refunds in its VOS decision. Instead, it left that issue to the Court of International Trade. Now, the Court of International Trade then ordered Customs to move forward with refunds, including for importers that weren't part of the original lawsuits. But the Justice Department is now arguing that the court may have exceeded its authority by ordering what amounts to a universal refund remedy.
Undercurrent America's editor Jason Huffman did a deep dive on what this means for the seafood industry. We've got a link in the show notes for all the details.
And actually, we've got Jason and Undercurrent editorial director Cliff White joining us now to talk more about Trump's ongoing trade war, specifically the new Section 301 tariffs being threatened, which, according to our latest reporting, would hit the seafood industry even harder than all the IEEPA-related tariffs charged in 2025. Now, the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative is proposing to target as many as 60 economies with tariffs as high as 12.5% on their goods. Cliff, tell us more about this new proposal. Is this a, like, sound the alarm moment? Should importers be starting to panic here?
Can you play an alarm sound right now? Because, yeah, sound the alarm. It's going to be bad. This could be potentially likely worse than the first round of tariffs, the Liberation Day tariffs, with a little bit more of a clarity or stability to them, which is the possibly one upside for the seafood industry. These Section 301 tariffs, which were announced on Wednesday and which will go into effect in late July, will impact 60 countries, together effectively account for 99% of U.S. seafood imports. It's everything. So the rate is going to be 10% on a few countries. Ecuador is amongst them. And then on another 54, it's going to be 12.5%. So that rate can't be changed on Trump's whim. It's going to be set. This is a much more tried and true process for implementing tariffs than Trump's previous schemes, which have all been proved illegal or are in the process of potentially being ruled illegal. So these are probably likely to stick around, but at those 10 to 12.5% rates.
So, you know, we talked about some of the biggest countries hit. Jason, you kind of looked at the numbers here. You want to kind of tell us, you know, who's going to be concerned the most here?
Chile, Ecuador, Indonesia, India, all on the list, all will get hit. The ones that are kind of surprising, and I'm not sure how this shakes out, one of the biggest sources of seafood for the U.S. is Canada. Canada previously has been left alone because of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement signed back in 2020 during the first Trump term. But they're on the list for a 10% rate. So is Mexico. So, I mean, are those providers of seafood from those countries having to now worry about the tariffs on, you know, for example, snow crab, lobster, major products that come with a, you know, a big bill? That's some of the questions I have about this. And the way it looks right on the surface is, yeah, they've got reasons to be concerned. I ran the 2025 import values and then figured out at a, they get a 12.5% rate under this plan, what that would cost. And it works out to only about $326.9 million.
Only.
You know, so yeah, so like it's huge. The total, did I say the total was $2.9 billion over the course of 1 year? That's bigger than what IEEPA, the rates that were caused by IEEPA. I think the biggest elements are the addition of Canada and Mexico, and then some of those countries that had sort of flatline deals are being thrown back in. And I think that raised the total tariff dollar amount. But yeah, this is really freaky.
What Jason just said right there is important. So he talked about these bilateral deals that the U.S. has signed. Some of them were signed before the previous round of tariffs were ruled illegal, if you can keep all this chronology straight in your head. Those deals were kind of thrown into flux. Were they still in effect with the tariffs now off? So for everything I understand, these Section 301 tariffs are separate from the USMCA, the Canada and Mexico deal, and separate from any other trade deals, unless there is explicit language in these deals that says these 301 tariffs can be disregarded. So all these countries now are going through another round of negotiations to try and get wording, specific verbiage in these deals that confirms that they are not required to pay these Section 301 tariffs. So it's lobbying day again in DC.
I think that, you know, if Trump was trying to pressure other countries back into negotiating, this will do it. The Section 301 tariffs are going to be harder to challenge. It's going to be hard to mount a court case against them. We have experience with Section 301 because Trump used that against China for years. It was not stopped. So here we're looking at the same approach. It's going to require a regulatory approval process, which USTR has complete control over. They can take comments. People can say, we don't like this. I think it's a bad idea. But USTR can still move forward with it. And then once every year, they've got to review and potentially renew the tariffs, which they did with China. So this might be a really ongoing running problem. One of the other questions I have, Cliff, maybe you know the answer to this. Is this tariff on top of other tariffs? In other words, Section 122 tariffs that were issued back in late February when IEEPA went away, 10% across the board. Do these countries also, is this on top of that 10%? It seems like it is, right?
It is. They stack. But with the caveat that the Section 122 tariffs expire on July 24th, technically that's the end of them. Although the Trump administration has bandied about trying to find a loophole by ending them and restarting them, which would reset the clock. But now with these other tariffs in hand, he might not do that. So yes, currently, if these 301 tariffs are implemented before July 24th, they would stack on top of that 10% Section 122 tariff.
Amanda, I think there are two groups that are going to be happy about this. One is going to be the domestic producers who are competing against imports. If they also have an import business, they're not happy. But the domestic producers will be happy. The others that will be happy will be the trade attorneys, because they are going to get so much business out of this. If this was a law that Congress would pass, I would call it the Trade Attorney Employment Act, because this is going to be money for them.
There's a third category, Amanda. That's reporters, because we love digging into this stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. Mixed blessing.
It is definitely a mixed blessing here, because there are a lot of factors going on. And Cliff, this isn't this. These Section 301s aren't the only things in play right now, right? We have additional on top of that somehow.
Yeah. So we talked about stacking. Well, there's another Section 301 investigation coming down the pike, which should be announced in the next couple of days, what the rate projected or proposed rate from the Trump administration is going to be. It affects another 16 countries, several of which are major seafood players, and those will stack as well. So again, we don't have the exact figure for those, but the 16 countries included in that investigation are China, India, Indonesia, Norway, Vietnam, the EU, Mexico, Thailand, Japan, South Korea, and there's also some other minor seafood players in there as well. But those are the big names, and there's a lot of them.
Yeah, a lot of the same guys that are on this list are on that list. And they're also, all those guys that you just mentioned are almost all major sources of seafood.
Now, Cliff, you mentioned a lot of countries right there. Did you bring up Brazil?
No, and thank you for bringing that up for me. I know this is a lot. And at the pain of sounding overwhelming and bringing seafood players to tears, there is yet another Section 301 investigation that was just finalized with a proposed rate of 25% against Brazil. That includes all seafood exported from Brazil. Brazil is a major player in tilapia, snapper, tuna, and lobster. So all that's now going to be hit with a 35% tariff until those 10% tariffs go away, but they could also face additional Section 301 tariffs. So Brazil has always been in the center of Trump's ire when it comes to tariffs. They used to face a 50% tariff till that was ruled illegal. Now back up to 25% plus an additional 10%, so 35 right now.
Well, as you could tell, Cliff and Jason have been eat, sleep, and
I've been smoking them, Amanda.
All right, eat, sleep, and smoke in the tariffs here. But we've got all the coverage you could possibly need on Undercurrent. So if you're not subscribed, subscribe now, because these guys are pumping out news every day on everything you need to know.
And actually, Amanda, there's even more tariff news. There's the initial reaction from some of these countries that are the target of these tariffs, which was not good, to say the least, and could result in them turning to other markets rather than continuing to try and deal with this turmoil in the US. And there's also the surprising news that the US is negotiating with China on potentially lowering its rates. So more stuff online.
Like you said, Cliff, it's a reporter's dream to be covering this.
Truly, truly is.
Now on to the markets. And we'll take a look at what is going on in farmed salmon. So this was a pretty interesting week, because we're starting to see some signs that the spring rally may be losing a little momentum. In Chile, fresh fillets move across the board, giving back some of the gains we saw following a previous holiday production slowdown a couple weeks ago. Supply has normalized and demand in Brazil remains seasonally quiet. And there's growing discussion that additional Chilean volume could start looking toward the U.S. market if conditions remain soft elsewhere. That said, it's not weakness across the board. On the frozen category, portions remain extremely tight. Multiple market participants reported difficulty finding spot inventory, and 8-ounce portions continue to trade around that $8 per pound mark, where the 3 to 4 pound frozen fillet category is also still relatively firm. Norway was a bit of a mix this week. U.S. wholesale fillet prices moved higher, but spot market prices in Norway softened again after briefly rebounding earlier in the week. Some participants continue to point to strong biology, elevated biomass levels, and expectations for larger harvest volume levels as we move deeper into the summer. But in Norway, larger fish remain relatively tight. Overall, there's a growing sense that more supply is coming. And then with Canada softened this week, particularly in the smaller and mid-sized West Coast whole fish categories. Larger fish continue to hold premiums thanks to tighter availability there, but increasing competition from Chilean and Norwegian product is starting to weigh on some categories. So overall, the market still isn't oversupplied by any means, but compared to where we were a month ago, the conversation is definitely starting to shift. So instead of worrying about where fish will come from, more participants are asking what happens when larger summer harvest volumes start hitting the market.
In other news, radioactive shrimp was back in the headlines this week. Two U.S. senators are asking tough questions of three major seafood certification bodies following last year's recall of Indonesian shrimp that may have been contaminated with radioactive isotope CS-137.
The senators are Bill Cassidy of Louisiana and Tommy Tuberville of Alabama. Both Republicans sent letters late last month to the Global Seafood Alliance, the Marine Stewardship Council, and the Aquaculture Stewardship Council. Their concern stems from the FDA's recall of Indonesian shrimp that was potentially contaminated with CS-137. The FDA issued eight separate safety alerts related to the shrimp between August and October of 2025. In their letters, the senators focus on the role that third-party certifications and audits play in the seafood supply chain. They wrote that distributors, retailers, and restaurants often rely on certification programs to help determine whether seafood products are safe and responsibly sourced. But the lawmakers also said questions have been raised about the independence of those certification systems. Specifically, Cassidy and Tuberville wrote that for third-party certifications to work effectively, they need to be legitimate and include safeguards that prevent bad actors from exploiting the system.
The senators asked GSA, MSC, and ASC to explain how they developed their standards, how they assess food safety risks, and what enforcement mechanisms they have available when companies fail to meet certification requirements. The lawmakers also pointed to what they described as an increase in food safety incidents involving imported foods, particularly seafood. They said consumers deserve to understand what role certification programs play in ensuring seafood is safe to eat. So, how are these organizations responding? The Marine Stewardship Council told Undercurrent that it welcomes the opportunity to engage with the senators and answer their questions. Laura McDerris, MSC's U.S. Program Director, said, as an environmental nonprofit, the Marine Stewardship Council's fishery certification program and eco-label are designed to recognize sustainable wild fisheries and incentivize improvements. She said, we welcome the committee's questions and look forward to providing more information about the MSC program.
The Global Seafood Alliance also responded. Devin Meserve, GSA's Vice President of Marketing and Communications, told Undercurrent that GSA strives to advance responsible seafood practices, including food safety, through criteria established in international standards developed through an independent, multi-stakeholder process and recognized by international benchmarking organizations. She said, we appreciate the congressional focus on this issue and look forward to responding to the committee.
ASC shared a similar sentiment to UCN, but made sure to enforce that it is an environmental and social aquaculture certification program and is not a food safety or product quality certification program.
And for our final story of the day, a fish swap that has been generating plenty of attention in the food service world. Captain D's, the largest seafood restaurant chain in the United States, has officially confirmed that it's switched from the imported Pangasius, also known as swai, to Alaska pollock for its signature hand-battered fish products.
Which isn't exactly a surprise for Undercurrent subscribers. We first reported back in April that Captain D's was making a switch, but now the company has publicly confirmed it and revealed that Seattle, Washington-based Trident Seafoods is its supplier. The company says it's investing millions of dollars in what it's calling a wild-caught fish from Alaska initiative. CEO Phil Greifield says the move reinforces the brand's focus on seafood quality, generous portions, and value.
The messaging seems pretty deliberate. They're really leaning into the fact that the fish is wild caught and American. Captain D's is describing the product as an all-American offering from harvest to plate. The company is highlighting Alaska's sustainability standards and its partnership with US-based suppliers.
But how we got to this point is actually pretty interesting because for years, most customers probably had no idea what species Captain D's was serving. The chain has generally avoided talking publicly about species. It at one point mentioned that it was serving pollock, but then things changed last year when Mississippi's seafood labeling law took effect. Once that happened, customers could see that Captain D's was serving farm-raised swai from Vietnam, and some of those customers were not thrilled about it.
I remember some pretty vocal social media reactions.
Oh, there were. And at the time, Captain D's responded by saying it had switched fish because of market availability, but it also told customers it was listening to feedback.
And apparently, it listens closely. It says consumer research and focus groups played a major role in the decision to return to Alaska pollock. Now, when people hear pollock, they might immediately think of products like McDonald's Filet-O-Fish, but Captain D's appears to be taking a slightly different approach. Sources told Undercurrent in April that the company is buying deep skin pollock fillets rather than processed pollock blocks. So we're talking about actual fillets rather than a formed fish product, which is important because Captain D's has long marketed itself as serving hand-battered fish fillets rather than processed fish portions. And Captain D's isn't exactly a small buyer.
No, not at all. Sources estimate the company, which has about 530 stores across the US, could require around 5,500 metric tons of Alaska pollock annually.
So, pollock supplies have been under pressure. The USDA has been buying significant volumes of pollock products. Food service demand remains strong, and production during the recent A season came in lower than expected. So, now you have on one of the largest seafood restaurant chains in America coming in and adding even more demand. And industry participants are already talking about wholesale price increases of 15 to 25% as buyers compete for available supply.
If you want to stay up to date on what's going on at the markets, Undercurrent is the place to be. Subscribe today to get access to UCN's price and trade data, news stories, live event coverage, and more.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you back here next week.